Good evening, everyone. It is approximately 3 a.m. in Spain at the moment. And
good.
Yeah, and it is 7 a.m. somewhere else.
Right, and we're up early.
And it is 7 p.m. in sunny California. You know, in Australia, I guess, it's winter. Starting to be winter. It's autumn over there, and they got it all backwards and stuff like that. Thank God that we have it straight here, right?
No, here we're in the timeless zone.
We're at the end of time, is what Tamara is saying. But this is Wednesday night, and it's time for the ABD. And the ABD is the American Book of the Dead by E.J. Gold. This is a work to bring forth into this culture the ageless teachings of the Tibetan Book of the Dead. And I say ageless because it actually is not cultural at all. It is the recognition of the transit spaces that occur, and in particular, it is speaking about the time, the bardos, and it's called which is the in-between times. It's in between, and it's between. There are six different bardos that are referred to, but we're talking about the time between death of the physical body and rebirth, that particular in-between time. And we've all been, many of the people, I don't know who's online right now, but many of the people that have been involved may have known that we've had an extraordinary event this last week. An individual who's been deeply associated with the Institute for 40 years, 35 years, he met EJ in the mid-70s here, Neville Throckmorton, and has been working off and on very closely, very intimately, but has always been associated with this particular work effort. And as he put it to me, he says, it's the best game in town.
Sounds like Neville.
It is Neville. Mm-hmm. And Neville was an individual with a big vision. He had a big set of eyes. He could see a lot. He had a big appetite for life and for many, many, many things. And it was curious because personally I was working with him very closely for the last 5 months. First time I've worked that closely with him in ever. And it was a delight to get to know him as an individual and to watch him in his life transit too, because he started to indicate that what he wanted to do was, you know what he said, I need to take some time off. He started talking to me about this in January. He said, I need to take some time off. I got a book to write. I want to do this. I want to start this other kind of business. And just recently when the Institute purchased a mining claim up near Sierra City, which he had been in, he used to fly fish up there.
Mm-hmm.
And he wanted to go back up there and work on some of the rivers and things like that. So Neville has, for a few years now, has been suffering from leukemia. Leukemia is a cancer, and there are apparently four types of it, and that's about all I know. He indicated to me that the particular type he had was very manageable. And in fact, you know, his doctors were saying that he had probably lived for 10 years. He was in his mid-60s. But every so often, every few months, he would have chemotherapy. Now, what is chemotherapy? I mean, I don't know if there are any doctors here, but what he told me that it was that it kind of kills the cancer cells, and it also weakens your immune system, and it killed some of his red blood cells. And he had an episode about 3 weeks ago where he was taking chemo, and the red blood cell count was so low he couldn't get enough oxygen. So he had to go to the hospital. But he recovered from that. And he was getting strong again, and he was very happy. I met with him on Wednesday, a week ago today. We met Wednesday morning and had a very dynamic meeting with some other people in his industry. And he made some comments that were very interesting, and he was full of life. And he left, and apparently he had, oddly enough, he had a toothache, horrible toothache, and he decided that he needed to get it taken out. So he went to the dentist, had the tooth removed, and it got infected with the immune system the way it was. He had a very difficult time of it. And so for Thursday and Friday, he was having a very difficult battle. And then very late Friday night, he apparently went into the beginning of cardiac arrest, and then died at 4:30 in the morning on Saturday morning. And I was told that it was toxic shock syndrome. Whoever's on the phone, you need to be quiet there a little bit. And so I started thinking about this. I thought, my goodness, here's somebody that's been very close to us. He came to several of the ABD classes. He was involved with many of the events. ICW, his handle was Working to Be Ready, I think was his handle. Is that about right?
On the ashram.
On the ashram, Working to Be Ready. And he was working to be ready. So, you know, I thought about this a bit, and I thought, my gosh. So here he was Friday night going into physical trauma. I don't know if he had what his consciousness was at all at that time. But he was suffering through this physical trauma. And was he, at that moment, was he aware that he was the Voyager? Was he able to discern at that time that he was the Voyager? I don't know. But one thing I do know is that I consider, if you look at certain situations, you look at as the point of view of the Voyager, and what strategy did he select for himself? He never wanted to die in the hospital. He wanted to die at home. And who was with him when this occurred? He was with Bunny. Bunny is I call her his life friend. This is an individual that has been with him forever. And you know, he had other relationships and so on and so forth, but when the chips were down, that's who he called to his side. And Bunny is an experienced Voyager. She is a player of the First Order. He said, that's who's going to be by my side. That was his strategy. Okay? I look at it in that regard, those are the elements he pulled together to have around him. But during that event, during the times that he was going, I don't know if he was conscious or unconscious, but did something kick in? Did something kick in and he goes, I am the Voyager? And we'll get into this at some point, but and there's a fair amount written, the signs of the death of the body in the Tibetan literature, which I'll go into in at some other time. But he was in the arc, what I call the arc toward ultimate transit. And when he was in that arc towards transit in that regard, was he cognizant of the fact that he was a voyager? He was in terrific physical trauma. And if we think about the clear light prayer, which every time I visited him, either in the hospital or at his home, he had a copy of the ABD with him, and it was part of his cycle. And so the clear light prayer, if you think about it, the clear light prayer, it goes on and says, you know, okay, yeah, now I'm experiencing the clear light of objective reality. And that's like a, think of it as a map, okay? A map, that there's a map before you. And on the map, it can say something like, you're at 3rd and L, downtown Sacramento. So this map says, now I'm experiencing the light of objective reality. So how do you recognize then whether you are in the Voyager space or you are in the human biological machine caught up in it? And how can we get to a place where we can begin to recognize the fact that we are a Voyager? It's not written like this, but I broke the clear light into paragraphs, okay, which it's or and nothing is happening. Then it goes that my present sense of self, the Voyager. This is a prayer to the Voyager. This is saying, hey, I'm the Voyager. Now we get caught up in the poetry of the next phrase where it says, in reality, it is the void itself having no qualities or characteristics. But it's saying, hey, you're the Voyager, okay? You're the Voyager. Get it? Oh, and in reality, it is in reality the void itself. Then it goes on to say, I remember myself as the Voyager. I remember myself as the Voyager. Can you remember yourself as the Voyager? Now, can I remember myself as the Voyager? And then we go into the poetry of it and we say, which we do need to understand, the deepest nature is the clear light itself. I am one, there is no other. Yes, we need to understand that. But the prayer is a signpost to the Voyager, saying, hey, you're the Voyager. You're the Voyager. Here's some characteristics of you're the Voyager. You're the Voyager. And then it ends by saying, the last part, it says, I, the Voyager. And then it has other things that it says about it. But it's I, the Voyager. Always it's the Voyager, right? It's always saying, I, the Voyager. So, was Neville able to recall that when he got hit by a Mack truck of physicality during this arc of time from about 11 p.m. to 4 a.m. in the morning? You know, I've talked about this before, that these elite bodyguard people, remember this? I've mentioned this. These people that train to be elite bodyguards, they put them through the part of the training they do urban training, like they're running through hallways and things like that. And part of the test is that when they re- they turn a corner, they get shot with a paintball, and it's a tremendous pain to be hit by a paintball. But the discipline is for them to hold the space and continue to work as they are. I am the Voyager. And being hit by a paintball is like a millionth of the traumatic effect of losing the entire body. This, for most of us, for most of life, that is the foundation upon which we view the world. Now, on Saturday, then, at the ICW, in the email I sent out, and I don't know if everybody got a copy of it, but in the email I sent out, there was a link to a video. And EJ, I got a call, you know, about 4:30 or so, and I called over, and EJ was tracking it. He had already been called, of course, and he was tracking it. And then as the morning wore on and the ICW came, he said, he was saying to the group that Neville needs your help. That Neville needs your help, that he is, he's caught
in a loop.
He's caught in a loop. He's caught in a bind and he can't get out of it. What does that mean? What does it mean for you, okay? What does it mean that that's the case? We're not now talking about a theory here. We're talking about an event, a specific event that occurred for a particular Voyager. He needs your help. Now, regardless of your philosophy, and I know that there are varying philosophies, that doesn't matter to me. That's great. But I guarantee you, until you are in that moment, it is a philosophy. And I guarantee you that you can tell me your philosophy with great detail. And I'm very glad to understand it and hear it and try to learn and all of that. That's like reading a book on tennis, and then you play against a world-class tennis player. Mm-hmm. It's a whole other world. That's what we're talking about. How do we drive home this concept? So EJ goes on to talk about this. And he says he's caught in this loop. He needs your help. He said he was in a dive. And then EJ says is that he needs to let go. I listened to that and I thought, you know, I've heard that. I've heard that a lot. It's out there in the New Age a lot. You know, just let go, right?
Mm-hmm.
Come on, Ivan, just let go.
Yeah, sure.
Let go, Cameron. You just let go. Now, that's one thing to say and get all happy, you know, I'm going to let go of my depressions, whatever you're going to let go of. Just let go of what he said to you. Let go of what she did. We're talking about this concept on a fundamentally different level. This is the NFL. This is the big leagues. This is being hit in this regard. Now, we have talked, and Silverdale, I think, is online, and we've talked many times about this idea that we are working with the human biological machine as a transformational apparatus of the essential self. These are two electrical bodies interplaying, okay? Now, if we've worked on ourselves a bit, there's something there. If we've only lived our lives in the human biological machine, there's still an essential self, but let's just say its aliveness is so muted as to not be present. So, what is the reaction that you will have? Are you able to find yourself flipped into, and yes, I am the Voyager? You say, well, you know, how am I going to know that? I can't practice dying.
No?
You can't? And this is the fundamental part of this. We happen to be working with the ABD. I wish Pat was here. She couldn't make it tonight, but. What reading? You'll be, Jana, you have your book with you? What reading would we be on if we were doing the 49-day reading? Is there anybody that's doing the 49-day reading? Okay.
Saturday, Sunday, Monday would be the clear light. Tuesday would be the fourth chamber.
Okay.
Wednesday, the fifth.
That's exactly right. That's what I came up with, too. The fourth chamber. Where are we in the study of our book, Ivan?
Well, we're there.
It's exactly where we are.
We are there.
Right?
Yeah, I guess it just depends how you
practice.
And we're Wednesday.
Yeah,
it feels like the fourth chamber to you. Yeah, and you know, so I know that. So here he was caught in something, right? He was caught, and EJ was talking about this, and it's let go, and it's time to move on. Now we've done readings for people. I remember when we did a reading for. Remember Blair? You were around here when Blair.
Mm-hmm. You. I wasn't actually.
No, you weren't. Okay. I was.
I know of it, yeah.
And Blair, when he died, he was one that we worked with in a certain particular way. But when he died, he had a hard time giving up the body. He couldn't release it. Tom Arnes, on the other hand, I don't know if Ken is online, but Tom Arnes apparently immediately loved the fact that he was now no longer restricted to the body.
Mm-hmm.
So Neville's out there, and he just, you know what, he needs some help. And what happened next, Tamara? Your phone thing. Were you here? What happened next?
Oh, so after EJ completed the ICW, there was a spontaneous decision to begin to do a vigil, a three-day vigil. And it was an incredibly powerful event facilitated by the gracious Jedrick. And members of the community throughout the world came and we read from the ABD the readings, the second, third, and fourth, confronting the clear light for the 3 days, and it finished Monday morning at 4:30. It was tremendously powerful to be in the space. I felt like we became a prayer wheel. And, you know, you would hear voice after voice, you know, reading until we were, a prayer wheel circulating in this vast space.
I didn't hear how many people were there again?
Oh, up to 40 at one time, yeah. I mean, all the meditation circle cushions were filled and people were around. And, you know, some people were able to stay. Some people would come and participate and then go. But it was a powerful.
What do you mean that they did readings? I don't get it.
Not only readings, there were songs.
What readings? You know,
from the ABD. Primarily read the Confronting the Clear Light, but there was also the readings, reading two
and three.
I know three was done.
One section when David was talking tonight that just kept resonating with me was, how do you recognize that you're the voyager? Well, one of the ways is that you don't resist these perceptions, sensations, and cognitions as they dawn upon me. Any experience, whether apparently real or unreal, is still part of the dream. And so long as I seem to be having experiences and perceive change, I am still in the dream.
Which reading is that?
That is the second reading.
Number two.
And I just thought, well, okay, well, that makes a really clear guideline. You know, if I'm, you know, perceiving, you know, change and having experiences, then I have ceased to recognize myself as a clear light.
What happens to the arm right now, I believe, was saying that she was quite moved by reading number three, and particularly this phrase, I remember the effort I made in my human primate life to exercise the special attention and presence of the voyager. So, it doesn't say, and then when I die, I do something. It says, I remember the effort I made in my human primate life to exercise this special attention. You know, they talk about pennies in heaven. This is what this is. This is the pennies, the moments of presence and attention that you exercise right now. So these individuals, 30, 35, 20, 25, 30 individuals were gathered together. Now, did they just, like, read the clear light once, and then that's all that happened? And then... So what I'm hearing everybody saying is they just kept reading it, and just in English, right?
No, it was Italian, Spanish,
Italian,
French.
Spanish, French. There was a strong central core of how the prayer went. There was a big Tibetan bell that in the center of the circle that if you were in this, in second life, you could ring the bell, and that helped transit from one reader to another. So this was a spontaneous group of people that 25, 30 people stood together reading. I heard one guy, Red Miguel, was singing, Alleluia. And various people, primarily though, was the constant reading of the clear light in different languages that had the same tonality. If you listen to Nortiana read this stuff, it'll knock your socks off. But it was, so that's what we meant. You meant by a vigil then, right? So you mean there's like all these people gathered in virtual reality, in second life, for 72 hours. When did they take a break again?
There were no breaks.
There was no breaks. So it was just a constant vigil. That is what a vigil is, by the way. A vigil is not, you know, I can go from like 4 to 4:30 and then I'm kind of busy. A vigil is a constant presence and effort amongst these individuals to hold the space in that way, to hold the space so that there can be a clarity of vision among these individuals.
David, is Judy here? Can I make a comment?
Please, Judy.
The vigil is really... I see you moving. Am I talking at the same time as you?
Don't look at the screen.
There's a lag.
Okay. The vigil is really critical because we don't know when that actual moment is going to come, that moment when the person goes into that condition of balance.
Okay, I'm gonna pause you there because I want to parse what you're saying. It's very important. Okay?
So what she's saying is that we don't know when the moment is going to occur. Did Neville know when the moment he was going to die? He didn't know. So it's this constant effort. Spinoza just came through my brain. It's this constant effort at virtue. This constant effort at truth is virtue itself. Not a sometimes, but a constant. And in the Bible, in the Old Testament, it says, I pray always.
Pray unceasingly.
An unceasing prayer, as the Eastern Orthodoxy put it together in the Philokalia, I pray always, unceasing. Because we don't know when the stranger in the night is going to come. Sorry, Judy, keep going, though.
Well, that you know, pretty much says it. But if you look at the Tibetan Book of the Dead, but you know the edition edited by Evan Wendt, I just want to read one sentence here. So beautiful.
Sure.
After death, thine own consciousness, shining, void, and inseparable from the great body of radiance, hath no birth and death, and is the immutable light, Buddha Amitabha. It is stated that the mentality of the dying person momentarily enjoys a condition of balance which is compared to that of a needle balanced literally or laterally on a thread. But it is added that owing to the unfamiliarity with such a state, the consciousness principle of the average human being lacks the power to function in it. Blah, blah, blah. And it's constantly going on. You're reading at the moment that consciousness arises at death. If you're just taking 2 hours out to have lunch, you don't know the moment that the person is going to be in that state where that is the moment that they need the clear light prayer.
But now we know that Judy has 2-hour lunches. The point is that to pray unceasingly is what these individuals did. Now, why did they do it? You were there. Who was there? Anybody? You were there, right? Why did you do this? Why were you doing it? Come on. Give it up. Give Dan the phone. He's ready to talk. Chicken.
Why? I did it because I wanted Neville to have a good transition.
What do you mean? You mean roses and like rose water and nice I'm going to be asking you a question, George, in a minute.
Well, since he had already passed, I don't think that rosewater and music would have been much good.
What were you doing, though? What were you actually doing?
Guiding.
Evident in the space. Guiding?
Reading instructions. Well, what we were actually doing was reading instructions for the Voyager. Trying to remind the Voyager.
What were you reminding the Voyager of?
That he is a Voyager.
That he's just like a cool guy?
That he... Sure.
What were you reminding him of? What did he say?
I remember myself as the void.
Right. Remember myself as the void.
The voidness of the void.
How did he thus remember that? What was the way, the manner in which he remembered it? George.
Yes. Well, look, the way I explain this to myself is that our Voyager is constantly aware of itself as a part of the clear light. But in our degraded state of consciousness, that is to say in our unconscious state, we're not really aware of that. And so the way that we practice to recall that is by relaxing our body or relaxing our mind, you know, entering kind of a meditative state that facilitates the activation of our essential self, and then we gradually become familiar with it as a separate electrical body within ourselves. Well, to my way of thinking, in the time of death throw, as our body begins to shut down, it is being forced to pacify itself, since there's nothing animating, you know, it's not being active, and in that kind of forced pacification, that is the death throes, the Voyager just naturally, the center of gravity shifts to the Voyager, that is that part of ourself that is completely indifferent to what's happening to the physical body. It's just becoming aware that it's active. Let's put it this way, that it is, yeah, it's the captain of the ship, so to speak.
It's the captain of the ship, and it is reminded, what I'm trying to get to is your great phrase that is I've incorporated in my work now, is it was a vibratory sensation.
It is, yeah. And in that moment of clarity, it begins to hear or become aware of the readings that are being done for it when it, you know, when it recognizes
the individuals. So the individuals working in that space, in that way that Judy was telling us, this constant vigil of the, turns off. The constant vigil, here's the interesting thing. As they began to form, Tamara said, it was like a prayer, what did you call it, prayer wheel?
Prayer wheel.
Prayer wheel, that's one way to put it. It started to form a single entity. And that entity was speaking with one voice. Sometimes it was in a different language, but it was one voice because it was a vibratory, constant vibratory sensation as a beacon going out to the Voyager, because the Voyager can be helped. How can the Voyager be helped? By being reminded of the vibratory sensation that is in fact who they are. What were they doing? Why were you reading?
It kind of goes back to what you were saying at the beginning. It was an idea, the idea of letting go. That when you let go, when you, of the passions, aggression, the ignorance, you revert to your native state. And so that beacon or that frequency just kind of, you know, it's like, oh, you know, this is, I am one. I am the clear light. It's not something that you have to do. It's more what you have to let go or stop doing.
You have to. It's a matter of acquiescence and surrender. And then suddenly there's this big beacon that you can see in the sky. It's this big beacon that individuals. EJ, in this little talk he gave, he says, you can get help. Mm-hmm. We don't actually believe that.
I think this was a clear experience that help is there, help is present, and help can be received.
And it can be received. The help. Yeah.
Okay.
This
was a clear demonstration that help exists, that it can be given and it can be received.
Okay. Yeah, actually, David, I would say that for people in this vigil who have not done ABD readings, you know, people who are not familiar with the role of the reader, this was a very strong experience of it. In other words, let's say again, if Pat were here, anyone who's done periodically readings for anyone else, knows this item that you're talking about here.
Precisely.
That there's contact, that there's a sensation that you have or an experience that's unmistakable. It may not be quantifiable or scientifically provable or something, but, you know, for everybody who's a professional or veteran practiced labyrinth reader, there is a sensation of guiding, of
for the people that were reading,
with the voyage.
For the people that were reading, there was a sensation.
Yeah.
They were able to recognize the sensation of the higher vibratory body while they were participating and working in that space.
Yeah, and I think that's it's a tremendous start. I mean, this is actually a tremendous practice for all of those people. You know, it's like you're saying, a demonstration of something. Anyone who was there, who spent any amount of time in that vigil, can now work with this class that Star Ananda is giving on the How to Be a Labyrinth Reader, or just pick up the book, read the section in the ABD that says how to use this book.
One of the
and,
things
you can start becoming a reader.
One of the things that EJ said in this little talk, it's about 3 minutes long, one of the things he said was that you can get help, and part of the help is that you know that there are alternatives to the loop that you're stuck in. You know that there are, and the way you know that is through the vibratory sensation that we're talking about here.
The one that Nortiana pointed to, which is, I remember the effort I made in my human primate life to exercise the special attention and presence.
So, these individuals, who are these individuals reading for?
Voyager.
They were reading for Voyager? Yes, they were.
And it was an experience of reading, but also being read to. I mean, you know,
that's what I'm getting at. Susan,
yeah,
are you on?
It is another version of the exercise we just did for our class.
That's what I wanted
to read
to
each other.
On? Yeah, okay. Susan's not on, okay. You want to read the comment or? Is Pianjo on? He didn't make it.
David, you're looking for comments in the chat box that are significant?
Yes, please.
Silverdale's going to read.
Boy, I'm just wondering, you know, there really hasn't been that much. Let's see.
Mark Roche's comment, Dan says.
At 7:35.
Yeah, so starting there, Mark Roach says, EJ had said that Neville needed help. And for us to get the message across to Neville, let go, move on. Let go, move on. Let's see what else would be of interest here. Of course, Melissa Lorca, in response to that, said he had to get his bearings. Mark continues, and also EJ had said we were working to get him to the ashram. I like what Gnostic Man adds here. Letting go to realize that, in fact, the Voyager is the clear light. And I think that's really significant. Mark Roach continues, it was also a strong experience just hearing so many different readers reading for so long on end.
Nice, well put, Mark.
Pathworld contributes, we did it in D2 for a guy in a traffic accident. It was so strong, it made me cry, and I kept going, but couldn't see the screen sometime. Mark continues with a comment, about the sensation of the higher vibratory body when reading, I noticed at one point that I was reading to the other readers, but then I realized it was all one big vibe and that it amounted to the same thing.
Let me just make a comment on that. That's part of the point that I'm reminded of what Judy was saying too, is that we're reading to the Voyager. And when we are in the Voyager space ourselves, we're reading to the Voyager. We're reading to the Voyager, and the Voyager is reading to us. And we're reading to the Voyager at that moment, who is reading to us. And you'll see, if you get into the space clearly enough, that it doesn't matter if it's in English or Spanish.
Really?
Italian, on the other hand.
Well,
the book is still red. The Italians will notice. Even the Italian book, it's red like this.
Go ahead, George.
Simon has a question.
Okay.
I wonder, how can that be experienced or perceived as a loop in those realms? Remember, EJ, in that snippet you posted, talked about him being caught, Neville being caught in a loop. So how might that be experienced or perceived?
Here's how. Okay. I have a two-pronged answer to that. One answer I'm going to give has to do with Neville, and the other answer has to do with us, with me. With Neville, he got caught I'm thinking that he got caught in the body of habits that is all he knew. So all he knew is this body of habits, and something's very different, but I know what to do now. I'm just going to go do, I work a little harder. I'm going to, somehow I got to get up. I'll go to work, and that, because that's what I do. So the body of habits was driving him, and it was a loop that he couldn't get out of. Why couldn't he get out of it? Because at that moment, he couldn't know that there was an alternative. He didn't know that. All that existed was the loop, was the body of habits that he got caught up into. And so how do you recognize those sensations, Simon? You know, I put that question back to you, is how do you recognize the sensation of you get caught, the loop that you get caught in every day? Because you're going to get caught up in a loop. And I've been saying this when we started this class, is this is a class about us and the body of habits that we're in today. And everything you do is creating a body of habits. What creation are you doing? Have you penned today, in a sense? What is the body of habits that you have voted for today? Did you vote for bitterness? Did you vote for failure? Did you vote for a possible vision? I saw somebody post something on Facebook, and they were talking about bad, you know, karma and how I got to put up with this karma, and I've done this, and I got to handle the karma. And I just wrote a little comment. I says, well, you know what? There's good karma, too. Maybe there's good karma, too, but it's, and you recognize it through vibratory sensations, not external actions. Go ahead.
So actually, Simon responds to what you've just said. Yes, when I recognize my mechanical habits or behaviors,
Yes.
And until I realize and can change them, that is to regain my presence.
To regain your presence, and that's the discipline that we're talking about, is that this is a reading for you. It's a reading for me.
Well, we've got a lot of comments here, stimulated a lot of. So Gopal says, I think that Neville's passing made the vague idea of death a much more real experience for me. And seeing how the ashram responded, seeing the circle was profound. The synchronicity with this class is also amazing. I certainly agree with that. The synchronicity of Neville's passing and our studying the ABD, you know, this is a textbook example. So the next comment, Starnanda, reading to refamiliarize the voyager that they have been in that space before. And then they can remember and voyage like business as usual. Then they can move on and transition. Scafudi says, yes, I think that is what EJ meant, because he said, regarding Neville, he is not going to work on Monday. This was the loop, his business life.
Yeah.
You know, our historical personality functions according to a body of habits. We do.
Yeah, Silverdale, it's without a doubt. EJ talks about this a great deal, in fact, he writes about it in a lot of different places. There is an affinity, there's an electrical, vibrational affinity for that lifetime, you know, for that mechanical life, you know, of my Voyager, my essential self. And, you know, those artifacts like the movie Defending Your Life, you know, the movies that are somewhat about the Bardos, there's a lot of representations of this life review, you know, this type of thing. And it comes up in The Strange Life of Ivan Osokin, and other examples also. So there, you know, there's a tendency for me to be drawn back in there, you know, which is supported by my habit of thinking, oh, I could redo that. I can do that better. I can make a better version of that. I'm gonna go back. In other words, I can be, if I'm not thinking as a voyager, or not, let's say, not fully as a voyager, I may be caught up in this attraction to do something about that lifetime or to go back into it.
Well, the phrase that Judy read from the Evan Wentz version of the Tibetan Book of the Dead, you know, is that the person that died doesn't recognize that they died.
Yeah,
well,
really.
I mean, I know how to live my life. Oh, I die. So EJ said that the loop, he says, all of us will go through this passage. All of us will go through this passage. I took it also slightly metaphorically, that we're going to go through passages during our lifetime as well. Boom! Do you flip into the essential self, or do you revert to the habitual training of your historical personality? You can see what you do. You can watch yourself, can't you? He says that the cycle can be broken. And he says, but it has to be broken from within. Go ahead. George, you still feel like reading, or do you want me to have Dan read?
No problem. Anyway, only really one final comment here before we've been caught up, maybe two. Mark Roach reminds us that this subject of being caught in loops is addressed a bit in one of the Norton Street episodes. So you might recall a number of years ago, EJ produced a number of Norton Street episodes, and in one of those, apparently, he discusses the idea of being in a loop. I see Lost Horizons is just added. In the Norton Street script, Crystal and Mike are the guides whose job it is to remind the bornless one who he is whether he likes it or not. So that's a
minor
game for those who have who are familiar with Norton Street script.
So Neville passed away, and we have the opportunity in a certain way. I mean, in a certain way, we have the opportunity because of his adventure. We have the opportunity to learn something in a completely different way, just like Grant said. Suddenly, the idea of death became much more real for us when our very close friend passes away. It's part of our body passes away. Does that remind you of a poem, Ivan?
More or less.
Ask not.
About the island, yeah.
For whom the bell tolls, for it tolls for thee. I didn't get into it, but I wanted to bring up the practical work on self. And chapter 24, Practical Work on Self, is entitled The Last Hour of Life. And in that chapter, which we've been reading in the mornings and the Practical Work on Self class, is some methodology for driving home this concept of living your life in a more conscious manner and how to do that. Finally, I wanted to discuss I think there's going to be a 49-day reading cycle beginning. Nortiana is not too tired. She left?
Yes.
Nortiana? Oh, Nortiana has a comment.
Yeah, I'll be happy to read that. She's actually quoting from the ABD. The voyager does not need to wonder whether or not this data, that is the instruction for transit, will be there when it is needed, because it will be needed. Even for those who have practiced the teaching in life through constant intentional stress, visualization, and psycho-emotional reinforcement, readings are performed as a backup, just in case something should go wrong, go wrong, go wrong, go wrong. And then she adds, anything could go wrong. That's the importance of the readings and the reader's work. Good contribution.
Very nice. And I believe the 49-day reading cycle is going to be held in the ashram. People may also personally be doing the 49-day reading cycle, but it's going to be held in the ashram at 3:30 in the morning, California time, and 3:30 in the afternoon, California time, which is some other time for other regions, for other places on the planet. And couldn't have been better timing, Molly Midway is telling us. So you'll go there if you go there. Do you know where it's going to be?
The location could be typed into the log for everybody who's on tonight. Location for readings in second
one. And so you can go there and participate with that group of readers. And you may want to, if you're going to read on your own, oddly enough, you know, we were just about to do the fourth and fifth chambers in this class. We'll see how it goes, but we're gonna get into that next week when we start that. And one of the individuals, I heard something about, I don't know if you can see this particular one, this particular book here. It's called the American Book of the Dead Guidebook.
Yeah, which was a way of distinguishing it from the Red Book, but that was known in the past as the Practitioner's Edition.
Okay, so this was known as the Practitioner's Edition, and
yeah.
It's got a totally different... Do you have a copy of this, George?
No, I think I have the original hard
practitioner's
cup, hard, yeah, the hard. I do have a practitioner's guide hard copy.
Hard
cover. I didn't realize it was in paperback.
This corresponds to a hard cover. And apparently, I heard one comment that Neville had asked Bunny that he wanted to be read from this, among other things. That was just one channel. And, you know, she was, because it's a different language altogether, I mean, a different form of language. And he just says, don't try to understand it, just read and get the cadence of it. So the reader comes forth just in the service of the reading. You come forth in the service of the reading. When I read for my father many years ago, it was interesting. You know, I have no idea how it worked in a certain way for him. I mean, I'd read a number of times for people. But I kept getting my father was he was a brilliant man, very smart, very intelligent, and totally unsympathetic to my spiritual path when I was young,
right.
A young man of 19, and I came to the table really excited because I heard this phrase, know thyself, and I thought, isn't this great? And he goes, well, what do you mean? I know myself. I'm the guy that's talking to you.
Mm-hmm.
So I realized I had my work ahead of me. Mm-hmm. But when I read for him many, many, many years later after he died, and I was reading for him, there was this thing, like this quiet response. Interesting.
Oh, yeah. Nice.
Interesting.
I got to share something. I got to share something with you, David. This is when Nancy's, my wife's father, she brought him out here at the end of his life from South Carolina. To be at this eschaton place, you know, the elder care place, and it was a great place. It looked like it was going to work out great, but unfortunately, his health rapidly declined. His state went downhill, and you know, basically, he was only here 3 or 4 months, or maybe anyway, it was less than 6 months, and he passed. He went to hospice and then he passed. But I was the first one when Nancy got the call. I basically went over to the hospice to sit by his bedside, and there wasn't anybody else around, and I did the clear light readings. I did this first set of readings, and that was an experience unlike any other I've ever had before. I literally was ready to burst out laughing. Like, I felt this tremendous mirth and sense of levity by the end of the readings, and it was like something I had never experienced before. It was like completely coming from wherever he was.
Yeah.
It was like, this is a joke. Like, hey, that's very funny. You know, like, what are you trying to tell me? I'm already gone. You know, I'm already off. Or something like that. You know, it was like very unusual.
So you can, yeah. If it's something you want to do, it's read for Neville on your own during your own time. Go ahead and begin that. And experiment with the sensations of doing such a reading. What is it like for you? We had an event the last few weeks where we read to each other, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So we greased the wheels a little bit here. And so now we'll take it to the next level because there's somebody that may need a little guidance in the next few weeks.
Yeah, that's great. 3:30. Yeah, if I can do it 3:30 in the afternoon. 3:30 a.m. is going to be a little more difficult.
Well, you're assigned to the a.m.
I could do the a.m. Yeah. I could set my alarm clock, actually.
Yeah, so what?
That would work. Then I wouldn't get up.
The other thing I'm thinking of, David, is what a wonderful opportunity for the class. They would choose to
do these cycles. Readings. You could
know,
do a cycle of
perfect,
readings.
If people want to do that, if they want to do a cycle of readings, you're welcome to do that. There's a number of you can either do it on your own or you can do it in the ashram if that's something that appeals to you. But we'll be going slower than that in the class because we're gonna read. We'll probably address readings 4 and 5 next week on Wednesday. and the readers will be have gone beyond that.
Yeah, because there's a piece we would want to start with, which is the, what is it called?
The introduction, the apparitions.
The first apparitions.
Yeah.
There's a whole section about the first apparitions.
They're really what? 4 and 5 are very important. We're going to get into that because they are important. And we need to spend some time with each of them, and we might have people who have done the readings that can give us some feedback into our class as well. So if that's any other comments?
Nope, we're caught up.
Well, thank you so much for doing that, George. I appreciate it very much.
No problem.
And we'll look forward to seeing everybody again next Wednesday at this time. Thank you all for coming. Take care.
Good night.
Good night.